Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening. This is Eating Disorder. Thanks again for joining us. I'm here with my co-host. I am the Reverend Spiro. I'm here with Chef Paul Girard.
Hello, Spiro.
And Adam Velez.
Hey, yo. How you doing?
And some friends. But I'm going to get right into a little experiment we tried to run.
yeah, it worked out.
This show is about hunger. And it's about how hunger affects us and how it affects everyone around us. And you know, we're very aware of it from the standpoint of, you know, there's a million different sources telling us about what hunger is, how it is a problem in America. But we tried to do a little experiment. It was $6.75 a day. That's what we figured out in our non-scientific experiment that
it was highly non-scientific.
Highly non-scientific.
No science involved.
All right. We could actually get from the government as single males. All right. And
failed miserably.
Fucked it all up. We really did. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, one of the things I have to say about myself is I am a really, really entitled person. I really am. I'm constantly taking cabs. I'm constantly buying what I shouldn't do. But at $6.75, the first day in the first part of the experiment, bought me an apple. It bought me yogurt. And it got me like a vegan bran muffin. I also have to say that, you know, Paul was quitting smoking while this happened, and I was on a diet while this happened, and Adam
week.
Was dead fucking broke when this happened, so his
Pretty
girlfriend
much.
Was feeding him.
Yep.
Right. So it was a day in the life for him.
It was nothing changed for me whatsoever. It was actually...
I got $6.75 for booze, and other than that...
$6 for booze, 75 cents.
Somebody somewhere was going to feed me.
Well, though, I had this, like, little thing of food, and I talked to my mom about it. My mom's old school. She's old country. She's like, $6.75, I could have fed a village.
But I think, you know, Spiro, I think there's a certain amount of that entitlement that you have is okay. You know, we've lived through a lot of that stuff. There have been plenty of times in our lives where we were destitute and we were living on the street and we were literally eating out of garbage cans. Yeah. I mean, I know for a fact we've known each other since kindergarten.
But when I came to visit you in New Orleans, we were eating out of garbage cans that the food was better than in New York. You know?
But I think one of the difficulties that I had with this week is that, you know, the way I view it is kind of like, I don't need to get malaria to help people with malaria, you know, and to say, you know, like I don't have to live for a week on $6.75 a day. You know, you could just tell me that figure and I'm going to say, that's ridiculous. You know, like, I don't need to put myself through hell for it. I had a really hard time the first day because I have a serious problem with decimal points, and I thought it was $67.50. So I went over.
$60 over budget.
Yeah, I went over very early on. But it's a tough thing, but it definitely has incited me to change. You know, there's a lot of things. If this radio show has done anything over the past couple of weeks, it's made me realize, like, if you're not going to put up, you got to shut up.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And I, you know, last week I was saying, you know, it's my choice to smoke, so I quit smoking. You know, I've been talking to people. I gave away more money this week to people on the trains and in the street than I ever did, and I always do. I'm always pretty generous about stuff like that. I want to help other people.
Well, but the vitriol on our Facebook page has been pretty intense. Like, people were like, "Oh, you should go to a food bank," and I'm like, "We're not really on food stamps. We're, you know, like, I'm not going to go there. That would be fraud." But at the same time, I tried to do the whole thing. No thanks to you. You didn't help me, and you didn't fucking help me.
Hey, I have a girlfriend.
You're a chef.
Me.
I did help you.
You're a fucking Puerto Rican.
I said sofrito.
Between the two of us, we should have had it all settled.
Rice and beans. That's all I wanted to make.
You made porridge.
I fucked up the fucking rice. Yeah, porridge. That's what I made. I made mush And then I oversalted it.
Well, that's the thing I've been talking to friends of mine about that run. They run very big charities. And I said, the thing that I've noticed the most about this is that people don't know how to shop and they don't know how to cook.
Yep, that's what it is.
I'm actually talking to people about starting some things up. And if there are any chefs out there or people who know how to shop or know how to cook who want to get involved, please contact us. But I think that that's a really big thing, that people need to know these things.
Yeah, it's because it was 3 days food. And you know what? I went out and got some fucking vegan dumplings and I was fine. But if I was on the budget, I would have been fucked. That would have been 3 days fucking food.
What makes you think the vegan dumplings are cheaper?
I'm on the fucking diet. I mean, just fuck off.
I know, but still, man, really? You'd be so much better off going and buying yourself lettuce. Or like going to buy something that has a label on it for vegan dumplings because you're probably paying for packaging.
I buy a stick of butter and just keep it in my pocket.
How did you do? You live on chicharrones all week?
Chicharrones? No, I lived off of a cup of noodles with an egg in it. Just put an egg in it. Drop an egg.
That's good, man.
No, that's a power move. I got my protein. I got my noodles. You know, all my food groups right there.
How'd you do with the drinking?
The drinking? Well, luckily,
you cheated.
I don't cheat. I go to bars where I get hooked up. You know, I know the special, the last of the dive bars in Lower East Side. I still go to those places where all the bartenders know me and they know my name. When I walk in, you hear the theme song,
like Norm.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
All right, we're gonna introduce a couple of friends. We got our friends Lisa Barzak and Kat Villaverde, and they work with an amazing organization that I completely support and I love. That I discovered off of, you know, E.V. Grief, called The Space at Tompkins. What they do is they provide aid to the transient homeless population in the Lower East Side. And one of the things they do is they actually, they kind of bring these people together in Tompkins Square doing a peanut butter and jelly dinner. You know, can we talk about that?
It's
for a second?
It's good that you're doing that in Tompkins Square, not in Prospect Park, because people you'd have half of the transient people telling you they were allergic to peanuts.
Can you cut the crust off this, please? I'm not a fan of the crust.
Can we talk about that for a second and what the organization does and a little bit about hunger and food stamps and whatnot?
Sure. Yeah. Hi, I'm Lisa Barzak, and I'm the outreach consultant with the Space at Tompkins. I've been working with them, well, volunteering, I guess, since 2010. And like Spiro said, every Thursday depends on if it's in the winter, it's 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. We're indoors at Judson Memorial Church. They donate a room to us. If it's in the summertime when it's warm, we are in Tompkins Square Park from 5 to 7 p.m. And basically, it's just a peanut butter and jelly dinner. We have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We have juice boxes, bags of chips, cookies, and then also other supplies like socks and toothbrushes, toothpaste, you know, basic hygiene items. And really, we do that because we're strictly an outreach-based organization. We don't have an actual space. We're not a drop-in center. So we do this so that every week from a certain time, we never cancel, rain or shine.
That's awesome.
We try to cancel once, and you know, our clients don't have phones or really use Facebook, so there was no way to contact them, and people showed up anyways. I ended up having to go down, and
How many people do you usually get?
Well, in the wintertime, it's very small because it's a transient, you know, population. So a lot of people move, you know, south for the wintertime because it's very cold and, you know, it's not fun being homeless in New York City in the wintertime. So we could get as little as one person showing up or as many as maybe like 10 or so. And then in the summertime, we can get up to 20 or 30 people, you know. It's a gathering. It's a place that, you know, a lot of these people don't have phones or things like that, and so they know that their friends are going to be there in the park from that time to that time. Yeah,
and,
you know.
And, well, one of the things that we talked about before the show, and I want to talk more about, is in regards to getting these people. Like, one of the reasons that they do these gatherings is to get people aid, and trying to get. One of the problems that people don't understand about the idea of homelessness is that you don't have a fucking home. Like, there's no place you're going back to. Like, you know, when we were talking earlier, like, yeah, we suffered a little bit, but look, if I was really hurting, Paul, I had your couch, as you had mine, you know? Now, a lot of these people don't, and when it comes down to it, one of the things that attracts these people over to the peanut butter and jelly dinners is that they can get food stamps or they can get set up for it and whatnot, but there are challenges that we don't even know about. And if
well, exactly.
You wanna...
Yeah, I mean, the point of having the dinner is, honestly, it's not even really to feed people. It helps, and we have the food there for people, but really it is to get people to come to us so we can provide all of the other services that we can, such as helping people apply for food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, SSI, trying to get people into shelters, IDs, birth certificates, referrals to mental health or
treatment programs.
Can we talk
about
some
of the challenges on food stamps specifically? Maybe?
Sorry, yeah. So as far as the food stamp program goes, it's actually not very difficult to get onto food stamps as long as you have identification. The only thing that you really have to have is no income, and that's not a problem with our clients. However, once you're accepted into the food stamp program, you have about, it's usually between 1 to 3 months before you have to start doing this able-bodied work program. This is something new that started about, 2 years ago, and if you're considered an able-bodied adult, which everybody is in the beginning, you are required to work 80 hours a month for the government, basically. You have to report to this place. It's supposed to technically be like
a wet worker program or something like that where they
Yeah, clean. You're supposed to be learning skills and resume building and this and that, but honestly people are either just sitting in a room with someone reading a book or playing on their phone or
like homeroom.
Yeah, or you're cleaning or you're not really, it's not really productive.
Well, what's the age group of a lot of the people that you deal with?
It's mostly between, anyone as young as 16 or 17. But it's mostly mid 20s or, early 30s or so.
See, cause a lot of that stuff, when we were doing the wild stuff that we were doing, I was doing that and I was living that way. I mean, aside from the fact that I was an addict, I wanted to live that way. I wanted to live like Jack Kerouac. I wanted to be on the road. I wanted to be on the street. I wanted to be wild. Yeah, I wanted to ride the rails. I wanted to do all that crazy stuff.
Right.
I wasn't signing up for any government programs because, so I can kind of see why it would be hard for these guys to be showing up for even 80 hours a week.
You have to be there at nine in the morning. You don't have an alarm clock,
exactly.
when you're living on the street. What are you supposed to do with all of your stuff? What are you supposed to do with your dog?
Which
90% of our clients have dogs. It's just not realistic.
How do the dogs eat? No, seriously.
They
probably eat pretty well, right?
They do. The
dogs
eat way better than the people do, honestly, hands down.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I got involved in the organization was because this article in Evie Grief it was all about calling them crusties, and I've used the word crusties, and I'm sorry I have, only in the fact that the dehumanization that came from the comments afterwards was fucking ridiculous.
It was insane, and
one of the things I look at it from is okay, look, a group of white kids who can actually run from one city to another, and actually, that's the last white entitlement they have. A group of black kids, that's a fucking gang.
Yeah.
Okay, all of a sudden, now, be careful, there's a bunch of black kids all in one place in one fucking park. But because it's this group of punked up,
we always call them gutter punks. But my point about
crusty punks,
there's a huge difference in somebody who is in their earlier mid-20s that has a drug problem and chooses to be that way. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that they have trust funds and all that stuff. Whether they do or not doesn't really matter. But when you're in your 20s and you choose to live that way is a huge difference from somebody who may have a family or, several kids, and they have to live this way. They have to have food stamps, and they have to live on government assistance. I knew a guy who used to panhandle. He would get $600 a day easy. I mean, this was in the 80s.
Wow.
He'd set up somewhere on Park Avenue, and he'd get a bunch of quarters until he was set with drugs. I mean, and he had everything he needed. But I'm really curious to see about how people that have to? Like, how do they survive?
Well, it's interesting you use the word choose, because that actually comes up a lot. You know, everyone thinks that they're the chosen homeless, you know, which in reality, you know, the majority of them have been homeless since they were 12, 13, 14 years old. They were throwaways, you know, they were abused physically,
sexually, emotionally. I don't doubt that. I'm not trying to minimize their situation.
No, I know. And I'm just saying that to, like, clarify it, you know, it's not really a choice. I mean, to be honest, you know, whether or not they ran away from home or they made that initial choice to start, you know, shooting heroin or using drugs or drinking or whatever, and that was, you know, all fun and they wanted to be homeless and they wanted to live that traveling lifestyle, say they want to get out of it, I mean, it's literally almost impossible. It's not a choice anymore.
It's like the Sopranos thing. It's like, you know what? Money rolls up, bullshit rolls down. You know,
that was one of my things about how I said that, you know, that this was such an unscientific, uncontrolled experiment for us, because I was always such a resourceful kind of guy that I wouldn't have stayed in that situation.
I would have figured it out. Remember, like,
for as low down as I went, but I went pretty low.
Have come to me. I could have come to you. We had options, but I think we are going to go to break. This is Eating Disorder with Chef Paul Gerard. Lisa Barzac, Kat Villaverde, and Adam Velez.
How you doing?
And we will be back very soon. Thanks so much.
You're listening to Feeling by Peels on heritageradionetwork.org.
The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
This is Eating Disorder with the Reverend Spiro, Chef Paul Gerard, Adam Velez, and our friends Lisa Barzac and Kat Villaverde from the Space of Tompkins, an awesome homeless aid
doing good things
organization. And we've been talking about hunger. We've been talking about hunger locally and how it's been affecting us and what we're about in regards to how it's, you know, how we've seen it and how it's actually being seen by other people. And one of the things I want to bring up is, again, the vitriol from the Facebook feed. And we have people.
Yeah, but Spiro, that was two people. I mean, that was two people.
Not those two people. I'm talking about the other. This is from my personal page where you got people saying, "Oh, but these people should be picking themselves off their bootstraps. These people should be getting a better education. These people shouldn't be on." One of the big things is, you know, we're about to raise, hopefully, the minimum wage, right?
We'll see.
And about that. We'll see. Hopefully, I'm knocking on wood. Did everybody hear that?
Yeah. All right,
so we're not going to... And we have people that are completely against this because they think that everybody should, you know, have the same opportunities we had, right? And it's not just the people saying, okay, you know, oh, you should go to the food kitchen or the food bank or you should do X, Y, or Z. There's literal hate towards the poor. And when I actually went to go do our little experiment, I actually went to the health food store. I went because I'm that freaking queer.
Looks.
All right, I went to the health food store to get fucking my food stamp fucking dish. That and I said, "Do you take food stamps?" And this Twinkie next to me gave me this fucking look.
I did too. Right? I was in some organic place in the Upper West Side, and I said, "You guys take any food stamps?" By the way.
And you get a look. You get a fucking look, like, oh wait, okay. First of all, it was indignant. I'm like, oh, a white guy.
Are you cheating the system? What's
fucking
going on?
Some of the things that are amazing, like when I was working on a project with this guy named Tristram Stewart, who does food waste, and he has, he points out all the food that's wasted all over the place, and he came in September, and we went around locally to different farms and things like that, and we went to one farm to glean apples. The one farm in New Jersey in
glean
a day
apples?
To glean, yeah. There's a law, the FDA, that if an apple falls off the tree and hits the ground, it cannot be sold. In one day, we gleaned 17,000 pounds of apples. You know, that's one day, one farm.
Wow.
And then we went to a watermelon farm, and there were acres and acres and acres as far as the eye could see, and we cleared out. There were like I guess it was about a third of one of the fields, and that was three tractor trailer trucks full of watermelons, and we said, you know, like, why can't we get this food out to the people? It all came down to money. You know, they'd say, who's going to pick it? Mm-hmm. Who's going to pack it? Who's going to drive it? Who's going to pay for the gas? Who's going to, you know, bring it to the people? And they said, it's cheaper for us to just turn it back into the soil.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Wow.
Because the food is there. We can't, there's no way that anybody can sit there and say, this planet does not have enough food.
But it is, it's amazingly interesting how the hunger crisis is, you know, hand in hand with the obesity crisis, you know, and it's crazy though. Like, how do we get this food to the people? You know, you have a note here about, you know, last year broccoli was 99 cents, and this year it's $1.79. It's an interesting thing. You know, you go and you lay broccoli out all over and say, you know, free broccoli, everybody, free broccoli, and then you put a table next to it and say, free Big Macs. You know,
they're
nobody's going to take the fucking broccoli. Nobody
Macs.
Wants the broccoli. No,
you're absolutely right.
No, I know we do, but, you know, I mean, that's a huge part of it, is that you can feed a family on cookies and cakes and cheap crackers.
And hostesses.
The actual point came from our friend Kari, who's she's a single mom, and she's out in upstate New York. And we've known her for ages. Me and you and her have done some
ages.
Some crazy things together.
From Brooklyn to the bayou.
But she's now a single mom on public assistance, and she is currently raising two kids, one of which is aging out of that system. But I'd like to bring her into the conversation, because you know what, we can talk about her all night. Again, you've got like what, mayonnaise and fizzy water in your fridge
and jars of this juice.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty bad about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
because you eat out. But I mean, let's talk about somebody who actually has two.
Way to make me feel bad, Spiro.
That's my job. Can we get Kari on the line?
I'm here.
Hi, Kari.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello, Kari.
Hello, Paul.
How are you?
Spiro. I'm just dandy. How are you?
You notice how my voice gets deeper when I talk to sexy ladies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't use this sexy voice on everybody. You know, it's just for you guys.
We're getting warm and fuzzy.
There you go. You get a food stamp to start doing phone sex.
Spiro's already fuzzy.
You know. Anyway.
All right. So, Kari, look, what we're hoping to look at it is from the perspective of somebody who's actually in it. You know, and we know your story, and we know that you currently are looking at food stamps as a way to survive. But, you know, and one of the reasons was you want to tell us, you know, you got injured at one point or another.
Tell us all about it.
Yes, I did. I hurt my hip back around 2000, and I couldn't do anything about it because I didn't have health insurance. I was married to a man who owned a tattoo studio. We owned a tattoo studio. We had money. We couldn't get health insurance for anyone except my daughter. So I just lived with my hip. And when I finally did get health insurance after I had my son, or when I had my son, it turned out that I had done so much damage to my hip that it had to be replaced. There was no acetabulum left. That's the cup part of the cup and ball joint. And so I had that done, and I went back to work, and I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which made working harder, but I did it anyway. And then I fell down my attic stairs, and I hurt my neck, and I had to have neck surgery. Last August, they took bone from my good hip and replaced a disc in my neck and then screwed it in and put, like, a titanium cage around it. So I'm, like, a bionic woman now. And on top of that, I also, my other hip is bad, my lower back is bad, but I can't do another surgery.
Well, okay, so this made it hard for you to work. Let's talk about, like...
Didn't you work at a cup and ball joint in the 80s?
all right.
I was really? Sitting on that through the sad story. I was like, gosh, should I say it?
All right, but let's talk about, like, how it is, like, what is the what do you need to do to feed your family? Like what is the process? Like,
yeah, how do you mind if we add, how much do you get a week to feed your family?
I get $281 a month now.
Oh,
last
wow.
year was about $500 a month, which was great, and I had money left over, you know, food stamps left over at the end of the month. Every month, my, you know, my cupboards, my fridge, everything was so full, I couldn't fit anything. That's probably not the best thing to say right now, but it's true. And then Indira, my daughter, turned 18, and they took her off my food stamp case, although she still lives here. She eats here.
I know how you are with your eating habits and all that stuff. I mean, you probably shop a lot smarter than you, the average bear. You're buying healthy food, yet you still have your cupboards full.
No, my cupboards are not full.
Not now since your daughter turned 18, but before they were full.
Yeah, they really were. You know, and I bought whole foods and organic foods, not exclusively, but, you know, I did the best that I could to make sure that we had healthy food in the house. My daughter and I both have gluten intolerance, so we don't eat a lot of wheat. We don't eat Cheez-Its or crackers or stuff like that, and gluten-free food is a lot more expensive. So we've just learned to live without gluten-free food. We just don't eat stuff with wheat in it or any other kind of...
And you're upstate New York, so you can go to farms a little more often and things like that, and right?
I could if I had a car.
Do they take food stamps at the farmers markets? Do they take food stamps?
There are, but not to sound like the most pathetic person on the face of the earth, but I'd have to walk there, and I can't. So, yes.
What would you say the hardest thing about raising a family on government assistance is?
Oh boy!
And if anything that could be done for you, to improve your situation, what would it be?
Marry somebody rich. aside from that, I think the thing that really bothers me the most about it is that my daughter, who's a teenager, has a lot of friends come over, and when you only have $281 a month spend on food, you really budget it. And so when she has friends come over on the weekend and they spend several days, they're
locusts
gone. The
locusts.
Tortillas are gone. Everything's gone. And that's it. Like, that's all I have. So
house
then
home.
I have to dip into, you know, my cash.
But as horrible as that is, I mean, you should go outside and get a switch, because the government can't really do anything about that.
You should have a cover. You should have a cover fee for your house. You should pay something for the government.
You know, I would, except, like, the kids that you were talking about that are served by the Tompkins Square Project, there are kids like that here. And a lot of
they're
my
everywhere.
Daughter's friends, she actually works part-time in a youth outreach program for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids. And a lot of her friends from there are kids who really don't have families, who have families who don't support them. So we have a lot of kids coming to our house often for moral support, for a family environment, and frankly, to eat. And so...
It's not like it was when we were back in Bay Ridge where we first met you, when we were all friends back then. I mean, it's not like, you know, my mom would complain about Paul coming over and our friends and eating all our potatoes.
Yeah, but, you know, all 120 pounds. I mean,
yeah,
really,
exactly.
Really,
but that was the big difference is the fact that, you know, my mother would cook for a freaking army. You know,
and still complain that your friends were coming over to eat.
No, she loved to feed people.
Cubes
she
of feather the size of my head.
Yeah, exactly. She loved to feed people. But when it comes down to it, when it's on a budget, all right, when you have to actually count every penny, and it's coming from outside sources, well, you don't have any control, like the way they freaking cut our you know, the food stamps to poor families.
Unfortunately, we're never going to cover, you know, we're not even going to scrape the tip of the iceberg in a half an hour to cover this. Yeah. But I'll say the one thing that I did get out of this week is that I've gotten a lot more active. I've signed up with three different organizations to help people and to figure out how to get how to do my part. You know, like I said, if I'm not going to put up, I got to shut up.
You should be signing up for them.
What's that? I did sign up for them. I was a junkie in Topkin Square Park for the years. I paved the way in the 80s so they could walk through safely.
Thank you.
We'll have gourmet PB&J.
You know, but I think it is very important for every. I'm sorry?
I said gourmet PB&J made by Chef Paul.
Yeah, there you go. All natural PB&J. If it wasn't for peanut butter, I'd starve.
One thing I'd really like to tell you guys from my days of working in a food pantry, like I was the co-director, so to speak, of a food pantry network up here. People don't donate enough protein to the food pantries. They donate lots of
cheeses. More specific, is it more about beans or is it more about meat?
Yeah,
perishables. Meat. Lots and lots of beans, but you know what? Those people who don't want the broccoli don't want the beans either.
Yeah.
Tuna fish,
they're
spam,
expecting homeless
any
people
kind
with
of canned meat goes off. It goes really far because nobody donates that.
Wow.
It's because people donate what they don't want. I mean, they donate is left in their own cabinet at the end of the year or whatever. Yeah. And
in fact, most of the food pantries I've volunteered at, they're always just, give us cash. Is what they normally say. They're like, give us cash, we'll get what we need.
Yeah.
All right, folks, listen, we are wrapping it up.
Contact your local food pantry.
Yes, that's right. Right.
Put
do some shit for
up.
Fucking people. Fucking help people out. But next week, we're going to be here. We're going to have
thank you, Kari.
Yeah, thank you, Kari.
Pleasure, guys.
We're going to be here doing our Mardi Gras show. But I want to thank Cary Grant Gross.
We go from people starving to
Mardi Gras.
Massive amounts of alcohol.
I want to thank Lisa Barzak. I want to thank Kat Villaverde and our hosts. This is Eating Disorder. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.